It's Central Time. I'm Shereen Seward, in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu was in Wauwatosa earlier today to promote the Biden administration's investment in Wisconsin's clean energy sector, particularly electric vehicle chargers. Wisconsin will be receiving $17 million of federal funding for more charging stations, some of which are manufactured in Milwaukee. And the state Senate this week passed a bill that would free up almost $80 million in federal money to help businesses install electric vehicle chargers. Those funds are part of what the White House says will be $4 billion of money going toward green energy in Wisconsin over the next 6 years. With that, the administration will come new jobs. Julie Hsu is the acting U.S. Secretary of Labor. She was also born in Madison. She talked with Central Time executive producer Dean Knetter earlier today.
You were at the Milwaukee Electrical Training Center in Wauwatosa today talking about federal investment in electrical vehicle charging stations and the green energy sector. What's happening at that training center that made you want to highlight it?
That's right. So we're investing in a workforce system that will connect people to the good jobs that are coming to Milwaukee and employers to the people that they need. And that training is happening right here through a partnership between employers and unions, which we see as the best way to make sure that we can fill all the good jobs that are coming through the president's Investing in America agenda.
And what kind of jobs are tied to that investment? What's under that umbrella?
Today's announcement is about electric vehicle charging stations, and this is part of the unprecedented investments that the president has led in ensuring our clean climate future. It's also about infrastructure, right? It's about roads and bridges, and also how when someone's driving down that road in an electric vehicle, they can have a reliable way of making sure that they can get from point A to point B. And so for us, we know, and this president has said time and time again, that we make investments in things, in roads, in bridges, in high-speed internet, in clean air and drinking water. It's not just about making things. It's about creating good jobs, especially in communities that have been left out in the past. So we were here to talk about building that infrastructure.
And when a company gets federal investment to build something like an electric vehicle charging station or whatever it might be, and they expand, hopefully hire more people, what does the Labor Department do to make sure those are good jobs, like you said, that they have good pay benefits and that they stick around?
That's exactly right. So when we are putting out federal funding, federal investments, we are looking for employers, for partners who know that the best way to create the most secure outcomes is to invest in your workforce. It's also the best way to attract the most talented workers in this tight labor market that we're in. And so the Department of Labor's investments, today there was an announcement of $1.5 million to the Wisconsin Regional Training Partnership. But before today, the Department of Labor had already invested $3.2 million into WRTP Big Step. And that's because we know that infrastructure isn't built overnight, right? We need to lay the foundation, and we're doing that right here in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin to really meet this moment. So our investments are in workforce training programs done right, and that's through partnerships between employers, unions, community-based organizations, and local leadership.
I know for some people out there, hearing that investment is coming and bringing new green energy jobs with it sounds like a bit of a common refrain from politicians. For those listening skeptical right now, what can you point to in Wisconsin and say, hey, this job creation is actually happening here?
So that's the great thing, right? Today's investment is in a program that already has proven results. Today, we heard from several people who had graduated from programs already run by the WRTP Big Step and are now electricians. They're building the future in their own communities. And these are jobs that don't require a college degree. And so today I also met with many students who are, going to get their high school diploma and get the skills they need to get to a job. Now, the other thing is, across Wisconsin, the Biden-Harris administration has made about $2.8 billion in funding for 182 infrastructure projects all across Wisconsin. And that's about transportation. It's also about access to clean water. So we have seen projects begin, but in this next year, in 2024, we are really, really going to see them take off. And at the time that a project begins, it's too late to begin training, right? Which is why we're here right now talking about the training infrastructure that's going to be needed to make sure that once the shovel hits the ground, the people are ready to do the work.
And I know there's more money still slated to come into the energy sector from the Inflation Reduction Act. And there is a sense here in Wisconsin that, you know, opportunity, money, growth flows into Madison and some areas of Milwaukee and its suburbs. Can you say that other areas of Wisconsin are going to see the benefits of this, maybe those jobs?
No question about it. So part of this is because with President Biden's leadership, just the pure amount of investments are like we've never seen them like this before, right? So it's the federal investments, but it's also because, you know, instead of, you know, exporting jobs and importing products, we're actually investing in industry here in the United States, right? Having manufacturing jobs, having infrastructure and construction jobs, having clean energy jobs done here. We're also seeing more private investments. And so companies have committed over $4 billion in private sector investments all across Wisconsin since President Biden took office. So all of these, you know, I understand the anxiety, and I know that people, you know, sitting at their kitchen table or driving now and listening to NPR want to know that it's going to make a real difference. And that is why I'm here. That's why I'm in Milwaukee, so that every community understands that we intend these investments to really make a difference for those families. And we've seen them start already to the tune of billions of dollars. But as you already said, there is more to come, and 2024 is going to be a really big year.
And before we let you go, Secretary Sue, I just wanted to broaden out and touch on wages more generally. We hear from people a lot who call in and, you know, have a job, but it doesn't pay quite enough to really feel like they're getting ahead. I think that's a common sentiment out there. What are you focusing on when it comes to wages and how to stimulate wage growth?
Right. So again, President Biden has made very clear that when we invest in workers in this country, America is stronger, right? And we're not going to build a future in which workers get left behind. And so just at the high level, we have seen, right, record low levels of unemployment, which means along with high levels of labor force participation, meaning people want to work and they're finding jobs. And the other thing we've seen is real wage growth, especially for low and middle income Americans. Now, your point, though, about people feeling it, right? We also are continuing to battle high prices, right, which is, you know, really how people feel the economy most directly. The president has said that he wakes up every day, and we're all working to fight against that. But just, you know, the cost of things is one side of the equation. The other, as you're noting, is what people make. And so when you have good jobs in fixing a road, in, you know, like we're here today talking about electricians. These are jobs that pay a middle-class wage. And that investment is also creating, it's creating higher wages in other sectors too, because in a tight labor market, employers need to compete for workers. And we all see these as good things in an economy that does right by workers. So we want workers to make a decent wage so that they can support their families without having to work, multiple jobs. That is fundamental to the president's economic agenda.
We'll leave it there. Secretary Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Dean.
Julie Sue is the acting U.S. Labor Secretary. She talked with Dean Kinetter earlier today after speaking at the Milwaukee Electrical Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee in Wauwatosa. And Monday on the morning show, be sure to catch a conversation with Vice President Kamala Harris as she visits the state. That is Monday after 7. Coming up, we hear how TV and movies can affect a child's social and emotional development with an expert from UW-Madison. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Shereen Seward, in for Rob Verrett. Now, parents want to make sure their children aren't exposed to too many sad or scary things in movies or television so that the child doesn't develop emotional or mental health issues as a result. But at the same time, you don't want to shield children from all sad or scary things because that could prevent them from understanding how to process and manage those difficult emotions. So then, how much is the right amount? And what's the right way for children to experience these emotions in a safe and productive format? For example, the Disney movie The Lion King depicts the tragic death of the protagonist's father at the hands of his brother, Scar.
Scar! Brother! Help me!
Long live the king.
Such a powerful scene. The young lion cub Simba watches his father die, which you might think could be traumatizing to a child watching the movie. But throughout the film, you then see Simba work through those emotions and, spoiler alert, he avenges his father and he takes his place as the rightful king. The movie helps make it safe for the viewers to experience the difficult feelings and still make it through to happily ever after. Our next guest is an expert on the media's impact on child development, and she's here to help us with managing children's emotional growth. We want to hear from you as well. 800-642-1234. How do you see children process their emotions from television and movies? Was there a movie or show in your childhood that helped you access your emotions? And are there children's movies or shows that still make you emotional as an adult? Share your favorites with us. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Heather Kerkorian is the faculty director of the Child Development Lab and the department chair and professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. Heather, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Shereen. It's nice to be back.
So Disney movies like The Lion King often portray some sort of really upsetting tragedy that the characters eventually overcome. How do these stories help children with their emotional development?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is what makes for good TV and movies, right? Things that sort of bring up big emotions and sometimes spark tragedy and things like this. And I think for parents of really young kids, they try to shield young kids from that kind of information. And that makes sense in the earliest years. But one of the really wonderful things about media like TV and movies is they can be great launch pads for conversation. So as long as we've had humans living in groups, we've had storytelling as a great way to understand complex things, process big emotions, manage conflict. And TV and movies today are just the current version of that. So it can be a great launch pad for things that might be difficult to talk about.
How effective are children's shows and movies in supporting emotional development? Is it a real tool?
It can be. This is one of the areas where it depends a lot on how it's put together. And in the case of younger kids, it also depends a lot on how they're watching it. And in particular, if they're watching it with other people who help them understand what they're watching. So really, young kids aren't going to learn a lot from TV by itself. But if they're watching that show with someone else who helps them talk about that information and connect it to their own lives later, they'll get a lot more out of it.
How do you suggest we evaluate how well a specific story does this and how appropriate it might be for our own child?
Yeah, some of it will depend on individual kids. I think we all know we've had interactions with kids who are more sensitive or more confident with these kinds of things. So some of it is knowing that child as an individual, but some of it's also developmental. So how old is that child and how likely are they to be able to understand those concepts? For really young kids, they're going to be easily scared by things that look scary or violent, even if it's a good story, like a positive character doing a good thing. If it is really loud or looks scary, that can be really upsetting for them. So I usually recommend avoiding that kind of content for younger kids. For older kids, it's easier to show that kind of content and talk about it. for the littler set, I think the things we tend to look for social emotional development are things that mostly have positive depictions. We wouldn't want to use things, for example, that show a lot of negative antisocial behavior, even if there's a positive outcome in the end. Young kids are going to remember a lot of the antisocial behavior more than they'll remember the happy ending.
Mm. I'm curious about the flip side. What happens if children don't experience enough of these types of upsetting emotions? And maybe they're only exposed to happy, positive stories. Or what about the children who are exposed to no TV or movies at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. We don't know a lot about kids exposed to absolutely no TV and movies, partly because they're few and far between. Even when parents have the best intentions, often that's not the reality. And kids who have no exposure to screen media probably have a lot of things that are different in their lives. So it's hard to know how much that has to do with the absence of media exposure versus other things. There are certainly many other ways that kids can get access to social emotional lessons through school, through social interactions, peer interactions, parent-child interactions. So media is not the only place they can get this. So it's probably not what I would say is a critical resource. What I think is helpful is when kids encounter things like death and dying, for example, you gave the Lion King example. When kids encounter that in their real lives, it's going to be an emotionally upsetting moment for everyone in their lives. So media can be that kind of calmer, safer space to have these conversations so that kids are better armored to cope with those feelings when they do encounter them in real life.
One of the more modern examples of media teaching children about their emotions is this Disney, 2015 Disney movie Inside Out. Here's a clip from the movie when the character that represents the emotion of joy realizes that the young girl can't just have happy memories, but also needs to have sad ones too.
Sadness. Mom and Dad, the team, they came to help because of sadness.
How does that type of approach teach us about emotions directly?
Yeah, I love that movie for so many reasons. And one of them is the way that they've sort of taken really abstract concepts, things like emotion and memory, things that live in our heads that we can't necessarily see, and made them very visual and given them personalities. And I think that's a really wonderful way to make it something you can talk about with young kids. So making it visual and have personality. And I love this message in the clip that you played around the value of negative emotions, that negative emotions like sadness shouldn't be things we try to avoid. They're ways that we can get help, connect with each other. And so trying to avoid those negative feelings can actually be harmful and prevent us from getting the help that we need.
Can you expand on that a little bit more? I mean, how can we talk to our children about these stories? And what kinds of conversations should we be having to make sure that they're getting a well-rounded view of the world?
One of the really good things we can do, and media can be a great launchpad for this kind of conversation, is to check in with kids and ask how they're feeling, what they think about what they've seen. So if they see something scary or if they see something sad in a TV show or movie, we can ask them, how did that make you feel? How do you think that character felt? And that's a good way to start that conversation. Part of that just gives us, gives kids experience using emotion words, which is actually a really powerful way to learn how to identify and communicate their own emotions. It's just practicing that language and having words to put on it. So media can be a great resource for that. And then I think also being able to connect it to their own lives. So if we can say, oh, have you ever felt like that? Or how would you feel if that happened to you? It's a good way to help them relate to what they've seen in the media so that they can make use of what they're learning.
What are some of your favorite children's shows or movies, Heather, that you recommend, that you think are really helpful for working through our emotions? You mentioned that you really liked Inside Out. What are some other ones that we should think about?
Sure. Inside Out's a great one for movies, for older kids who can watch longer things. One of my favorites for younger kids, so Sesame Street is still the gold standard in a lot of ways. They continue to improve and research their content. So for younger kids, that's a great one. I still love Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, especially for social emotional lessons. I think it's done really well and gives parents really great tools that they can use in the real world to help kids replicate those lessons at home in their own lives.
Do you have any personal favorites from when you were a kid? I'm curious.
Oh, gosh, personal favorites for this. Mm-hmm. I was one of those really sensitive kids that got scared by a lot of things. That said, I mean, not for educational reasons at all, but my favorite movie from when I was a kid is The Last Unicorn.
I don't think I've even seen that. What? Well, I'm way older than
it's
you.
But, cult classic. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and what about those that really stuck with you? I mean, this conversation made me think of Bambi. I mean, I can't think of Bambi without getting sad.
Yeah, Bambi really scared me when I was a kid. And I think for me, for really little kids, they might not understand the concept of loss and death and dying if they're really young. They might not quite understand what that means. But the visuals, like the fire, I remember really vividly. That was, I found really scary when I was a kid. And you can read the characters' expressions and understand that they're scared, even if you don't fully understand what's happening.
A lot of these shows are really, I mean, the shows that are really popular with kids, like Bluey. Why is that so popular?
Oh, that's a good one. I've actually thought about this one a lot. I mean, a lot of parents love Bluey, and I think that's partly because of the radical honesty about parenting. I really love that they have good humor and good depictions of some of the challenges of parenting, where, you know, parents aren't always perfect, and sometimes they get exasperated, and sometimes they find their children annoying, and that's just real, and that's parenting. So I think parents love it for that reason. I think the kids love it partly because it has very relatable kid characters. And it depicts a lot of everyday scenarios that kids are used to seeing in their own lives. So I think they find it very relatable.
How difficult is it for parents to really help your children process emotions when you don't have control over what movies or TV children watch all the time? I mean, they're at a friend's house or whatever, and they come home and they talk about something that they saw, and you're like, what? I mean, how do you approach that?
Indeed. Yeah. This is one of the reasons I think it's good to watch things together and talk about them, because trying to minimize any exposure to potentially harmful content might work for a little while, but eventually they're going to see it or hear about it through peers at school in some other way. So I think it's good to have these conversations with kids early and often. So they know they can talk about it, because they probably will encounter it at some point.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Shireen. Great to talk with you.
Heather Kerkorian is the faculty director of the Child Development Lab and the department chair and professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. She was with us today discussing how children's TV shows and movies affect emotional development. I'm Shireen Seward, in for Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.